back to another episode of Almost Well Versed. We're back. Wasn't a lie. I told you, man. We're back. Hope you really enjoyed that last episode talking about my top favorite things from the last year. I know it's been a lot of fun being back on the mic. Still trying to get adjusted to being on camera. You know, a lot of technical issues and But, you know, we're working it out. Every week is we're learning something new. So we're back. And like I promised in the last episode, today we're going to be talking about something that I have a lot of feelings about. And that's going to be Wheel of Time. In case you didn't notice, I titled this episode, The Wheel of Time Show Has Fumbled the Bag. And that's, if I'm being honest, that's the best way I can describe the show. So what we're going to talk about today is we're going to go more in depth into The Eye of the World, the first novel by Robert Jordan. And then we're going to be comparing that to the Amazon Prime show. And I have a lot of feelings about both the book and the show in comparison. But we'll get to those feelings when we get to it. So let's go ahead and dive right on in. So, like I said, The Wheel of Time show, it was produced by Amazon Prime and it debuted back in November of 2021. There were 8 episodes. Once again, I should have done my research before I hopped on the mic. Let's see. Wheel of Time show. It was 8 episodes long, came out weekly. And funnily enough, this show has already been renewed for both a second and a third season, which, I mean, we'll see. So when I was doing a little bit of research on the show, it has a 7.1 out of 10 rating on IMDb, which honestly is a little higher than I thought. And then kind of same deal on Rotten Tomatoes. It has an 81% critic score, which was like really high for the chatter I heard about the show. But then, more in line with how I feel, it only has a 62% audience score. But yeah. So like I said in the last episode, so the whole first season of The Wheel of Time show is based mainly on the first book of The Wheel of Time called The Eye of the World. And if you didn't listen to my last episode, I kind of delved into that this Wheel of Time series is a 15-book series. You can get them all in print, or you can also listen to them on audiobook. I'm kind of doing a mix of both right now. And yeah, so the show mainly follows the plot of book one, but as we'll get into it, they do bring in some other stuff, and it's not just book one that they talk about. But to set everything up, I feel like to do a fair comparison of the book to the show, we all need to be on the same page about the book. So I'm kind of just going to go through and we're going to just like summarize what happens in this first book. We're going to meet the key players, what they're trying to do, you know, go through the whole deal. So then when we get to the show, we can give it a fair assessment of how does this adaptation stack up against the book, right? So in the book, it starts in a small town called Edmunds Field in a place called the Two Rivers. And if I remember, I'll pull up a map so we can kind of get like geographical space of like where we are. But the Two Rivers is kind of like I said in the last episode, Edmunds Field is like podunk nowhere. Like it's like at the edge. It's just farmers and stuff that live there. It's the same people that have always lived there. They're just traders by... That's what they do. They're traders. And what they know is the Two Rivers, you know? So you follow a group of three friends. You've got Randall Thor, you've got Matrim Cawthon, and Perrin Ibarra, right? And they've been friends since they were kids. If I remember right, I think that when this book starts, they're all around, I think they're supposed to be about 15. So, you know, like young adults, proper young adults. And they're preparing for this big, annual festival that happens, the Beltane Fair, where it's just like music and food, and it's just like a big town gathering that happens every year. And so when they're out here, all the townsfolk are out here enjoying their time. There's a surprise attack. And when I say attack, most of these people have never like fought a day in their life. Because like I said, they're farmers. They just live in this little podunk town. So their town gets attacked by these these creatures of myth called Trollocs, and there's a Mydral. And Trollocs are described as being like, they're beasts. So they're like half beast, half human, but like they smell, they're furry, they have hooves. And like I said, they're things of legend. Like, you don't just see a Trolloc around. Like, it's something that you would tell, like, you know, in like kid stories or whatever. But like, actually Trollocs and a Mydral show up and they're just wreaking havoc on the town. They're killing folk, they're setting fires. And then you come to find out that they're trying to capture the three boys, Rand, Matt, and Perrin. But then out of nowhere, this witch lady named Moraine, and I say witch lady, but really she's an Aes Sedai. Moraine shows up and she's accompanied by her warder or her protector, this guy named Lan. And they show up and she's able to use her magic and fend off the Trollocs and kind of like contain the situation. And so then you find out that Moraine, she comes and talks to Rand and the boys, and you find out that she is there because pretty much her life's work is trying to figure out who is supposed to be the dragon reborn according to some grand prophecy that the boys have never heard of course. So she's trying to find this guy who's supposed to be the dragon reborn, right? And so you're like, the dragon reborn? What? So to kind of delve a little deeper into like the setup, because if you can't tell, since it's a 15 book series, it's like the lore and the setup and everything is like really deep for the Wheel of Time. So it's kind of a lot. But pretty much the Dragon Reborn prophecy states that in every age, like throughout time, there's been a male named the dragon, and the dragon is supposed to be the champion of like of the good guys. In their world, it's the light versus the dark, right? So the dragon would be the champion of light that is supposed to rise up and fight up against the dark one, the devil. And the dragon is the reincarnation. It's like the same soul gets reincarnated every age, right? But the thing is, with the dragon reborn, not only are they prophesized to save the world, they're also prophesized to destroy the world. So it's like two sides of the same coin. They're fated to both save and destroy the world. And so when you hear an Aes Sedai that's looking for the dragon reborn, you're like, oh, we don't want anything to do with that. Like, take that magic shit somewhere else, man. Like, we don't want anything to do with that, right? But after the Trollocs and the Mydral show up, Rand and Matt and Perrin are like, okay, well, maybe what she's saying has like some truth to it, that maybe somebody here is the dragon reborn, right? And so if you remember from my last episode, I kind of touched on it, but according to the prophecy, it's like the dragon reborn was supposed to be born in a certain place, raised in a certain place, be of this certain age, and all three of the kids, so Rand, Matt, and Perrin, all kind of fall into this category. So because of this, Moraine doesn't know exactly who is supposed to be the Dragon Reborn, but to cover all her bases, she's like, I need all three of you guys to leave because, you know, who's to say that the Trollocs don't come back? And if they come back, I mean, like, all of your best guys already bopped, so how are we going to defend against them, you know? So even though they didn't want to, the three boys, they decide to travel to leave with Moraine, right? And so as they're getting ready to leave, they get a couple stragglers that want to come along. You have another one of their childhood friends, this girl named Egwene. And she's supposed to be like, it's like one of those situations where like Rand and Egwene's parents kind of like had the dream that they would grow up and like, you know, be married or whatever. So they've always kind of like flirted with each other and they've never like dated or done anything, but they're always together and people always assume that they're a couple. So Egwene was like, well, if Rand's going, then I'm going, right? So Egwene comes, and then they're accompanied by another guy. His name is Tom and he's a gleeman. And so in this world, a gleeman would be like a bard. Like, he travels from town to town and he plays the flute. He has a harp. He's just like a performer, right? But Tom was like, well, if y'all are going on an adventure, I'm a gleeman. That's like what gleeman stories are about, is about adventures, you know? So Tom ends up deciding to come. And then eventually they are joined by one more person from the Two Rivers, their town Wisdom. Her name is Nynaeve. And so a wisdom is like a wise woman, like a healer. Like she's really adept in like herbs. And when people get sick, you take them to the wisdom. Or if someone's having a baby, the wisdom comes and helps deliver the baby. Stuff like that, right? So Nynaeve was like, well, I'm not going to leave these kids alone with this Aes Sedai witch. So I'm going to come too. So, okay, a little more backstory. So the reason why I keep calling the Aes Sedai witches. So in like the whole prophecy, like the way that like the magic system is set up, right? So you have what's called the One Power. That's like the magic. And in history, like in times of history, it was both the males and females could channel the One Power and they worked together, you know, to build things and defend against attackers and blah, blah, blah. But the thing is, the way that the one power is set up, like the way the magic system is set up, is you have like two sides to it, right? So you have like the female side of the power that only females can access. And then you have the male side of the power, which only males can access, right? But then I think it's supposed to be like 3,000 years ago. There's a big event that happens. It's called the breaking of the world, where male Aes Sedai, male people that could channel the One Power, literally went mad and broke the world. And when I say broke the world, like they literally like broke the world. Like they crumbled mountains and raised new mountains and like caused floods and, you know, filled in lakes. And literally the world was broken. And all, pretty much every male that could channel that was alive during that time ends up going mad and dying. So after that, after the world broke and the final male died, they were like, well, we can't trust Aes Sedai. Well, the world was like, we can't trust Aes Sedai. You know what I mean? They literally fucking broke the world. So the female Aes Sedai, the ones that were left, pretty much had to like sign this pact almost with like the world leaders, saying that like, you know, they'll only use their magic for to protect themselves or to protect others. And they'll stay to their city, which is called Tar Valon, and they're going to train their own and mingle amongst themselves. So a cataclysm like that can't happen again, right? So when people are Aes Sedai, when women grow up and find, as they grow up and find out that they can touch this power, this true, the one source, Aes Sedai kind of have like a bad rap, right? So when this random Aes Sedai just shows up to this little podunk town and just so happens that there's creatures of myth, these Trollocs and these Maedhral here, of course people are skeptical. They're like, did the Trollocs only come because Moraine came, or did she come because the Trollocs were here? And she's over here talking about the Dragon Reborn, but like, isn't it her kind that kind of caused the Dragon Reborn, or to cause the breaking of the world in the first place? So like, there's some contention around Aes Sedai, but the gang thinks about it and they're like, well, our best bet is to just go with Moraine, because like she said, if they stay, who's to say that Trollocs and stuff won't come back and really fuck them up, right? So the gang leaves and they're traveling around. They're kind of just like trying to stay ahead of like the Trollocs and the Maedhral that are chasing them. So they're kind of just like hopping from like town to town or whatever. But and all the while Moraine is like trying to like tease out which of the three boys could really be the Dragon Reborn, you know, because like I said, they all kind of three fit the broad guidelines, but she's trying to figure out like, can do any of them like innately have the power to channel, or have they accidentally channeled and like didn't know? So she's like trying to figure that out. And then you also find out that Nynaeve and Egwene, the two women that came with them, you find out that they can channel. And Moraine was like, well, not only can they channel, but like they're kind of fucking strong. So she was like, well, after we settle this whole business with trying to parse out like who's the Dragon Reborn and we can get these Trollocs off our asses, she says that the girls should go to Tar Valon to train to be proper Aes Sedai. Because the thing is, if you're not trained in how to channel and use the one power, you end up dying on accident. Excuse me. Yeah, you end up dying. Just the power, like, burning you up from the inside out. And Moraine was like, well, they both have a lot of potential. I'm not trying to see them burn up from the inside out. So, like, after we get this all settled, let's go to Tar Valon and we can get you guys, like, pretty much enrolled in being trained to be Aes Sedai, right? And so while all this is going on, so you learn Nynaeve and Egwene can channel the One Power. You're trying to figure out who the Dragon Reborn is. But then you also find out that Moraine, she describes all of them, but especially the boys, as being what's called Ta'veren. And so Ta'veren is interesting. So someone who's Ta'veren means that destiny, or in this world, they call it the pattern. It's like the same thing. Like destiny or fate tends to weave around people that are Ta'veren. And the more strongly Ta'veren you are, the more things happen around you. So like coincidences, like luck always seems to go in your favor, stuff like that. And so as the story goes on, you realize that all five of them are Ta'veren, but especially the boys, they're really Ta'veren. Like stuff just works out for them. Like stuff will just work out, or like conveniently something will happen that they needed to happen. And so it's funny because me and my husband always make the joke that Robert Jordan really found a way to write common plot holes into the story. So like instead of it being like a plot hole or like a Deus Ex Machina situation, it's like, no, they're Ta'veren. So like that was supposed to happen. So that's kind of funny that Robert Jordan was able to do that. But yeah, so they're Ta'veren, and like I said, stuff just keeps working out for them. And so the Trollocs and stuff, they're still on their ass. They're trying to get away from them. And so they end up deciding to stay the night at this abandoned, this like spooky abandoned town called Shadar Logoth, right? And you find out that this town was abandoned because it's like kind of cursed. Like way back in the age of like when the breaking of the world happened, a lot of the creatures and stuff that worked with the Dark One were sealed there. Like their spirits, I guess, were like sealed there. And so because of that, it just like has bad vibes and people don't like to go there. But Moraine and Lan were like, well, if people don't like to go here, even Trollocs don't like to come here. So like we would be safe. Like as long as we like stay in our camp, like we should be good, right? But then boys being boys, Ram, Matt, and Perrin, they decide to go off and explore. And then Matt ends up finding this dagger. Unbeknownst to them, Matt takes this dagger that's cursed. And not only is it cursed, but it's like tainted with like the Dark One's power, right? So like the longer you are in possession of this dagger, the like more your personality changes, and like you just become more sketchy, and like eventually it's gonna kill you. But like I said, the gang does not know that Matt took this yet. But in the middle of the night, they think they're safe, but then Trollocs, they end up deciding to follow them into the city, and the gang ends up getting split up. And so this is the first time in the story where like you're really following like different POVs, right? So you've got Rand, Matt, and Tom. They're party one. They go one way. You've got Moraine, Lan, and Nynaeve. That's party two. They go another way. And then you got Perrin and Egwene. And so after they all get split up, they're like, well, we need to get back together, right? Like, how are we supposed to defend against Trollocs if we don't have the Aes Sedai? So for most of the story, you do follow Rand, Matt, and Tom, right? And so they're traveling from like town to town, inn to inn, just trying to like see if they can hear clues about like where Moraine might be, or like where Perrin and Egwene might be. So they end up traveling from, I'm just going to list them. They travel from Whitebridge to Camelin. And at Camelin, they end up meeting up with this creature called an Ogier, and his name is Loyal. And so Ogier, they're creatures of old. So they're kind of like giants. So like a lot of the big things in the world were built by groups of Ogier. So like your castles and your towns and stuff like that. Like they're just really good with working with their hands. And so they physically built a lot of the things that are like in the world. But now they kind of just like hang out amongst themselves. Like they don't really mingle amongst like common folk, like regular people. They kind of just like stay in their little camps or whatever in the forest. So they were really surprised to see an Ogier in the city, right? And you find Loyal is so great. He's like one of my favorite characters in the story. But yeah, so they end up meeting up with this Ogier who decides that he wants to travel with them because they're out here having this grand adventure. And that's the reason why he left, was to have a grand adventure, right? And then also when they're in Camelin, Rand literally accidentally sneaks into the royal garden, and he meets not only the royal heir, this girl named Elaine, he meets her two brothers, and then he ends up getting taken before the queen. So that was a whole thing. But like that's a perfect example of being Ta'veren. Like, he was just climbing around, like there was like a big gathering happening, and he was trying to see like what was going on in the gathering. And so he just like climbs up on a tree and then climbs up on like a wall, and then ends up being in the palace and meeting, yeah, like the royal heir and the queen. So yeah, that's a perfect example of being Ta'veren. But yeah, so that's going on in Camelin. And then you've got Egwene and Perrin. They meet up with this guy named Elias. And then with Elias, it's interesting because you learn that he can actually communicate with wolves, and you're like, whoa. And so like, he literally is talking to wolves. Like, they'll warn him like if people are coming, or like where food is at, or like if they see that somebody is camping off somewhere or something. And then from rolling with Elias, he tells Perrin that also he can talk to wolves, and Perrin was like, I'm not about this weird shit. Like, I'm not the Dragon Reborn. Like, I'm just a blacksmith, bro. Like, I'm not out here trying to you know, be a wolf brother. And Elias was like, well, it's something about you, bro. Like, that's just who you are. That's just what you got to do. And Perrin's like, you can miss me with that magic shit. Okay. And then, yeah. So Egwene and Perrin, they end up getting captured by, another faction in the world. They're called the Children of the Light. And so the thing with the Children of the Light are they're like really super religious. Like, they're all about like making sure that you're in the light, that you only do things that are in the light, that you don't fuck with dark friends, which is what they call people that like follow the dark one or follow the devil. And so so they end up getting captured by the Children of the Light, but then Moraine, Lan, and Nynaeve end up like causing a big old ruckus and like sneaking them out or whatever. And then finally the whole gang gets reunited in Camelin. And so when they're all back in Camelin together, you know, everyone's like, oh, I'm so glad you're not dead. Ah. But then Moraine learns that Matt took this dagger from Shadar Logoth, and she like freaks out because, like I said, that whole city is like cursed, like tainted. And kind of like how I was saying before, like the longer you're in possession of an item from there, the more it's literally like corrupting your soul. And Moraine was like, even though she is like a powerful Aes Sedai, like she is really powerful, breaking that bond isn't something that she alone could do. So she decides that the gang needs to all go to Tar Valon, which is like the Aes Sedai capital, where all the Aes Sedai are, because she needs her sisters they all need to come together and use their magic to try to break this bond before like it literally kills Matt, right? But then the thing is, before they can even leave to go to Tar Valon, they learn from Loial, and then the story is later corroborated by all of the gang is having the same dream, which is weird, but they all learn that there's trouble. There's always trouble, but there's trouble at the Eye of the World. And so the Eye of the World is this place that is literally, it's a pool. If anybody is familiar with Mistborn, it's almost like the Well of Ascension, right? It's this place of unfathomable power where if you are there, you can literally, it's filled, the pool is filled with the One Power. So if you're there, you can channel the power from the One Power, and it's literally unfathomable. Like, it's an endless source of power, right? But the thing is, there's some trouble there. Not only is there trouble, but it's the place that has seals for the Dark One. So back when the world broke, the way they were able to subdue the Dark One is they put 7 seals on him, I guess. You seal up the devil, I guess. But yeah, so they put 7 seals on the devil, but that's the thing, you got to make sure that those seals stay in place, because if they start breaking, then his power is going to start seeping out, and then like, you know, we're not trying to cause the end of the world again. So Moraine makes the executive decision. She's like, we got to go to the Eye of the World. Because here's the thing. Not only do they need to go to the Eye of the World, but the thing is, so she can channel. She's got like two like semi-scrubs with her that can channel. But then it's the fact that all three of the boys are really Tavarin. So she's hoping that if the whole gang goes together, that that'll like make fate swing in their favor, right? Because like I said, if you're Tavarin, things, coincidences and stuff seem to work in your favor. So she was like, all right, gang, we're going to the Eye of the World. And so the quickest way to get there, because it's literally like Camelin is kind of like far. Camelin is very far from where the Eye of the World is going to be, right? So the easiest and fastest way for them to get there is to travel through the ways. And so the ways is like, it's like the space in between time, the space in between places, right? And you can only access the ways by going through these special portals. And funnily enough, Ogier, because they're giants and they're really old, they have really long memories, Ogier are like one of the only factions that still really know how to like operate the ways. So it's just convenient that these Tavarin kids met up with an Ogier and they happen to need to go through the ways, right? So they get through the ways, some sketchy stuff happens in the ways, but they make it through, and then it dumps them out in a place called Faldara. And so Faldara is like a fortressed city, and it's literally at the edge of like the map. So Faldara, not only is it like fortressed, but like their whole thing there in Faldara is to be the protector. They protect against what's out there. So like all the bad shit. So you got your Trollocs and your Mydral and a spooky place called the Blight, which is like where all of the things of myth come from. Faldara's whole thing is to protect against the Blight. And the thing with the Blight is it's like, I'm trying to think of a good example. The Blight just means like the Blight is just like twisted and like corrupted. So like everything there is like kind of off, you know, like it'll be sunny, but then it's like really muggy, and then you think it's a tree, but then it's a creature trying to strangle you, and you've got like tentacle monsters coming out of the water, and it's the whole thing. The Blight, you don't want to be at the Blight. But of course, the Eye of the World is in the Blight. So yeah, so the gang has to go into the Blight to try to find the entrance to the Eye of the World. And of course, the other thing with the Eye of the World is you can only find the entrance to the Eye of the World when your need is great. When your need is greatest, right? And according to legend, one person has never found the Eye of the World twice. And you learn that Moraine has actually been to the Eye of the World before. So she's kind of worried that because she's in the party, they're not going to be able to find it again. But, you know, you got these three Tavarin kids with you. And so they end up finding the entrance to the Eye of the World. And it's guarded or protected by this creature called the Green Man. And he's like a tree man. Like, he's big and he's got like a deep voice and like he's got birds tweeting around and sitting on his shoulders and stuff. And you know, even he remarks, he's like, man, Moraine, it's like kind of wild that you were able to find the eye twice, right? And she's like, yeah, crazy, right? Gotta find you some of these Tavirids. But anyway, so they get to the eye, but the thing is, when they get there, they find a bunch of stuff. So they find one of the seals to the Dark One is broken. Bad news. They find two things of legend that were thought to be lost forever, right? So you've got two big things that end up being really important in the story. They find what's called the Horn of Valir, and you find Luz Theron's dragon banner. And so the thing about the Horn of Valir is whoever blows the horn is... It's said that they will call upon heroes of lore of the past, and it'll bring about, or it'll call like the start of like the last battle. So sum it up, you don't want anyone that fucks with the devil to blow this horn, because it's thought, because the thing is, it's been so long since the breaking of the world, like it's been thousands of years, people that are around don't remember like exactly like what it does, but they just know that it's supposed to call upon heroes of the past, and it's supposed to signal the start of the last battle. So they're like, okay, we need to yoink that. And then also lose Theron's dragon banner. So the last dragon, the last guy who was the dragon, the guy that actually broke the world last time, was this guy named Luce Theron. And his banner is something that was thought to be lost forever also. So they're like, I mean, it's kind of a good thing that we got here and, like, not the Trollocs or the people working for the Dark One, right? But then, of course, nothing is ever easy, right? So, of course, when they get all this, they're yoinking all this stuff and, you know, they're putting in their little pockets or whatever. But then turns out that they were followed there by two of the Forsaken. And so the Forsaken are like the Dark One's generals, right? I think there's 9 of them? 7 of them? More than 2 of them. So 2 of them end up following them there. And they're like, ha ha, we're about to steal this horn and we're going to kill these Ta'veren because I bet you one of them's the Dragon Reborn, right? So Moraine and Lan and Egwene and Nynaeve, they're fighting one. And then you've got Perrin and Matt and Rand. They're trying to deal with the other one. And then they're fighting, and Moraine ends up getting fucked up, but, like, they're able to help subdue the one, and then the Green Man has to step in, and he has to help them fight, and then he ends up sacrificing himself to kill that last Forsaken, and so that was really sad, because he was the last one, but then on the other side, you've got Rand fighting the other guy, and then you learn that Rand, he touches the power in the eye of the world, and he channels all of that magic and burns up the Forsaken, like, from the inside out. And then you're like, oh shit, it's Rand, man. Rand's the Dragon Reborn, of course. I would have never thought that the person that has the most POVs out of the whole chapter would be the Dragon Reborn. So that's, like, the big reveal at the end. So they're able to subdue the two Forsaken, and Moraine, she ends up, like, recovering or whatever. They have the horn, they have the dragon banner, and then also in that fight, so Rand is fighting the Forsaken guy, burns him up, fucks him up. He's like, haha, I did it. But then throughout the whole story, I think I mentioned it a little earlier, but, like, the three boys, they're kind of having, like, the same reoccurring dream, and in the dream they keep running into Baal-Zamon, who it's thought to be another name for the Dark One. And so after he beats that Forsaken, he kind of gets, like, sucked into a vision dream with Baal-Zamon, and they end up having to fight, and then Rand ends up being victorious and, like, channeling and using that one power to subdue him again, right? So then Rand is like, man, I guess I really am the Dragon Reborn, because I'm out here channeling like it's nothing, right? And yeah, the story, it doesn't really end abruptly, but it's just, like, after those fights happen, and then he beats Baal-Zamon, and then it kind of just, the story kind of just ends with, like, ominous words from Moraine saying, we found him, we found the Dragon Reborn, right? So, yeah. So that's pretty much summary of the book, and kind of like I was saying in my last episode, the beginning, like, here's the thing, of course, I'm going to just talk about, like, the main points, like, the exciting points, because we need to get through the story or whatever, but it's, like, it's a long book, right? And so it did take a lot of pages to get through all of this. And so by the time we get to the end, like, by the time we get to Eye of the World, that's when stuff really starts to turn up. So kind of like how I was saying in the last episode, it was, like, that first whole little more than half was what I struggled with getting through. But then once I started listening to the audiobook, and then once they meet up with Loial and Camelin, and then have to start going through the ways and have to get to the Eye of the World, that's when the story really starts to turn up. And so that's when I started to enjoy it, right? So we've talked about the book. We've talked a lot about the book. But now we're going to talk about the show. And so, like I've been saying, I have a lot of feelings about the show. Some are good, some are not so good, but we're just going to go through it. And here's the thing. I will say, well, number one, spoilers for the show, in case you haven't seen the show. Because the thing is, the show is kind of Wheel of Time in name only. Like, in name and character names only. They change a lot from the book. And the thing is, I understand, because when you're doing an adaptation, of course you're going to have to change some things, you know, for pacing and to keep the audience engaged. But I just feel like they changed a lot. But okay. So let's just go through. I literally made a list, a bulleted list of all of my things about the show. All of my, not gripes, but comparing the book to the show. So first things first, the show really makes a point of emphasizing that the Dragon Reborn could be any of the five people from Emmonsfield. And you're like, wait, but I thought the whole way that the magic worked is that females can already channel the magic. So isn't it a male that always has to be the Dragon Reborn? Yeah, exactly. It's supposed to be a male. It's the male half of the power. It's the males that went crazy and broke the world. Like, how could it be any of the five? That's the whole setup for how their magic system works. So, like, through the whole show, they just keep trying to pound it in. You know, Moraine will say it, or Nynaeve will say it. She'll be like, man, it could be any of the five of us, you know? Like, any of us could be the Dragon Reborn. And I'm like, no, literally, it can't be you or Egwene, because you can already use the magic. Like, the whole thing is, it's the males. That's literally the whole setup of how the magic works, right? And it's like, it's one of those things where, like, I understand the show writers, like, wanting to, like, be more woke, or maybe they're, like, trying to be, you know, more gender equivalent, but, like, it's not, like, being genderist. It's, you know what I mean? Like, it's literally how the magic system is set up. If Robert Jordan wanted any of the five people from Emmonsfield to be the Dragon Reborn, he would not have made the magic system like that. So, and the thing that fundamentally changes, like, a lot of the struggles that the gang goes through, if you're thinking, oh, it could be any of the five of them, and not just, oh, it could be any of the males from Emmonsfield, right? So, like, that right there is, like, one of my biggest gripes. But then another thing that the show does differently is they introduce a lot of characters and a lot of places that are not in the first book. And so, again, I'm sure this is because of pacing, because, you know, I'm not going to sit here and try to say, like, I know how to write a show. But if you can't tell from, like, how I describe the slog of reading through the first book, like, yeah, if you're going beat for beat from the book and trying to adapt that into a show, it's going to be really boring. Which I understand. I am glad that they changed some things. You know, they moved around some things. So then all of the eight episodes, like, there was something that happened. You know, it wasn't just like, oh, we're going to this town now. Or, oh, we're hiding from Trollocs again. So, like, that I understand. But they do introduce some players that are key to the story for, like, books two and three that aren't even talked about in the first book. Because, like, the first book is really supposed to be, like, the world-building book. Like, it's really supposed to set up the world, set up the magic, set up the prophecy. And at the end, you have the Horn of Valyr, you know who the Dragon Reborn is, you have the Dragon Banner, and you learn that the devil is loose. Like, that's really what the first book is supposed to do, right? But the thing is, in the show, they introduce a lot of people that are not in the book. Like, they introduce other key Aes Sedai that you meet later on in the story. Because, of course, like I said, you know it's not just Moraine. She's not the only Aes Sedai. Like, it's literally, like, they have a whole city, right? But, like, you get introduced to a good amount of key Aes Sedai that you don't meet till, like, book three, which is kind of wild to me. And then, in the show, they go to Tar Valon. Like, they go to Tar Valon. They're in Tar Valon for, like, half an episode before they decide that they need to go to the Blight, to go to the Eye of the World. It's like, wasn't that the whole thing? That it wasn't until halfway through the book that you learned that Matt had the dagger. So then Moraine was like, let's go to Tar Valon. Oh, but we got to take a detour to the Eye of the World to then go to Tar Valon. Like, that was just kind of wild to me. So they go to Tar Valon, they chill in Tar Valon for, like, a minute, and you meet, like, the head Aes Sedai, like, HBIC, the Amyrlin Seat herself. Like, you meet her, and, oh my god, bro, they just, like, not only do you meet the Amyrlin Seat, but, like, they just made like fundamental changes to her. And like, I don't even know if I want to. Well, I guess we're going into spoilers, but you learn that. So, okay. Let me gather my thoughts. So, okay. In the book, you learn that. So the Amyrlin seat, like I said, she's like head bitch. She's head Aes Sedai. And to be the Amyrlin seat, you would have had to be like an Aes Sedai, get raised up through the ranks, show your worth pretty much to like get promoted to like the seat of the Amyrlin, right? And because of that, you can just deduce that the Amyrlin, she had to have friends amongst the other Aes Sedai, right? And so, like, later on in the story, like, in books 2 and 3, you learn that she was, like, a student with Moraine and with a couple of these other Aes Sedai that you end up meeting. And you're like, okay, that's cool. That, like, gives some backstory, you know, like, it's, like, a point of contention amongst some of the Aes Sedai because, like, amongst the Aes Sedai, you have, like, different factions. They're almost, like, they're color-coded. So it's, like, depending on what color faction you're in is, like, what your main jam is. So, like, some of them are all about, like, knowledge and research. Some of them are about, like, out exploring. Some of them are battle mages, you know? And so the thing with the Amyrlin is both her and Moraine, they were blue. They were in the blue faction together. So, like, it's interesting because it brings a point of contention amongst the other Aes Sedai because they're like, oh, okay, maybe the Amyrlin seat like takes it easy on Moraine sometimes or like won't punish her or like lets her get away with things that like other Aes Sedai wouldn't get away with because they're both blue or like, oh, she's like showing favoritism toward Moraine because they're both blue. Like, you see what I mean? Like it brings this other element to it. But then in the show, bro, they disrespected my girl, the Amyrlin seat, HBIC, and you learn that in the past, her and Moraine were fucking? Like, was that necessary? You learn that they're lovers of past and, like, you know, they're, like, sneaking around, like, trying to, like, talk to each other, and you're like, but was this necessary? Like, I didn't need the Amyrlin seat. I didn't need to see her, like post sex scene with like the in bed with like the blanket wrapped around her. So, like, I didn't need to see that. Like, you gotta keep the illusion of grandeur about the Amyrlin seat, you know what I mean? Like, that's my queen, that's my HBIC. Like, I'm not trying to see that. Like, I just felt like that was so unnecessary. Like, I don't even know why. Like, why even include that? I don't. And again, I'm sure they did that to, you know, introduce some more drama and some more excitement. But the thing is, there's already, like, enough going on. Like, I don't need all that. You know what I mean? And so, so to go off of that, I do want to touch on, like, some key character personality differences. Because that's, like, the driving force behind stories like this, right? Is, like, you get attached to the characters and their personality and like you try to see why do they make the decisions that they make or like where are they coming from to make these decisions, right? And out of everything, I think this right here is like my biggest gripe, like the key character changes that they made, because it just changes a lot of the motivations, I feel like, in the show from what they were in the book. And not even in the book. I just feel like it changes them to make less sense. So, like, number one, you got Moraine. So, in the book, like I said, Moraine is, like, she's an Aes Sedai, right? So, like, this bitch is strong. She's smart. She's been out here on the road trying to find the Dragon Reborn. Her and Lan been out here in the world trying to, you know, learn stuff, trying to, like, be, like, sneaky spies and, like, trying to find the Dragon Reborn and stuff. But the thing is, in the show, they really made her, like, not that. I'm trying to think of, like, the way to best describe it. Like, they really, like, okay, the best example I have of this is, okay, so the whole thing with, like, an Aes Sedai and her warder. So, like, I described Lan as being her protector, but it's, like, more than that. Like, their souls are literally bound to each other to where whenever the Aes Sedai is doing something, the warder is there with her. Like, he is literally going to fight to the death to accomplish the goal and to protect his Aes Sedai, right? So when they decide to go to the Eye of the World and they have to go through the Blight, like I said in the book, it's the gang. It's all of them together. Like, every step Moraine takes, Lan is right there with her. But then in the show, whenever they decide to go to the Blight, Moraine decides to go by herself with Rand. Like, her and Rand just decide to go together to the Blight and to go to Eye of the World. And so what she does is she literally severs her connection with her warder so then he can't find her. And then they just go off into the Blight. And it's like, what? Like, that literally would not happen. Like, that literally would never happen. Like, that's the whole, why have a warder? If you're just gonna, like, oh, I don't want this bond right now. I'm gonna break it and then we can just do it again later. Like, that literally is, like, contradictory. Like, it literally does not make sense, right? So you got Moraine. And then also, there's, like, some instances in the show where, like, she is, like, hurt or, like, she, like, used too much power and, like, now she don't feel good. And it's like, bitch, she's an Aes Sedai. Like, she don't have time for that. Like, she does not have time for this. You know what I mean? Like, she got more important things to do. Like, that's the whole thing about being an Aes Sedai is, like, you were that bitch. And, like, that bitch does not get tired. She doesn't, like, oh, I need to go lay down. Like, no, bitch, no. And then to kind of go off of that with Lan, I feel like out of everybody, they did our boy Lan the dirtiest. Because the whole thing about, like, Lan is he's, like, dark and mysterious and, like, he's the quiet one. Like, he only says what words are necessary. Like, he does not have time for idle chit-chat, okay? Like, he's too busy trying to, like, protect Moraine, trying to look out for Trollocs and stuff. Like, now he's got to look out for these kids. Like, he don't have time for that. But, like, in the show, I swear to you, in the show, he talked so much. I swear Lan had more lines than, like, Moraine did. Like, he's just a talking. He's just a little, just always talking. And I'm like, that, like, makes him lose. That makes him lose, like, you know, the mysterious air around him if he's, like, always fucking talking. And then on top of that, I didn't touch on it in the book, but in the book, Lan and Nynaeve kind of have, like, a little crush on each other. But the thing is, like I said, warders are literally soul bound to their Aes Sedai. And that's not to say that, like, they can't go off and, like, have a one night stand or something. But, like, Lan literally does not have time for any other bitch. Okay. And so, like, when they kind of have this, like, unrequited love, like, you know, oh, in another life we could have been together, or, like, you know, oh, I kind of have the hots for you. You're like, oh, that's, like, so sad, you know? Here's Nynaeve. She don't even want to be here. And now she's kind of fucking with Lan. And oh, here's Lan. But, like, he's much too busy to, like, try to fuck with her, you know? Oh, man. But then in the show, they literally have a sex scene. And I'm like, what? Like, is that not the whole point? Like, I'm not over here trying to, like, you know, be a fuddy-duddy, trying to be chaste. But, like, that was, like, the whole point of their relationship, that it could not happen. It was like, what if? Like, what could have been? But then here we are. Here we go again, post-sex scene. I did not need to see Nynaeve in bed with, you know, a sheet wrapped around her, like, oh man, Lan, I'm so sad we can't be together. Like, that was so unnecessary. We did not need that. I'm telling you, we did not need that. Next on my list of grievances, we've got Rand. And so here's the thing. I know that they're supposed to be kids, right? Like I said, I think in the book they're supposed to be 15, right? And they get swept up into this grand adventure. And so, like, as a kid, you're going to be like, why am I here? Like, why are we doing this? You know, but in the show, I swear to you, in the show, he was so whiny. Like, he always was bitching. He always had something to say. And, like, that's not to say that, like, a 15-year-old kid probably wouldn't always have something to say. But, like, your literal life is on the line. And you're over here bitching to the Aes Sedai, the only person that can help you in this situation. Like, it just didn't make sense. Okay, Rand was bitchy. Also, Matt was really bitchy. Matt was he always had something to bitch about, okay? Like, and the thing in the book is, like, his person, that's the one. In the book, Matt's personality was so different. Like, he was supposed to be like, oh, you know, he likes to gamble and he likes to, like, you know, pull pranks and, like, make jokes and stuff. But in the show, he was just always bitching and it was just pissing me off, man. Every time it was like a Matt scene, I'm like, oh, here we go. Here comes Matt the asshole. So, and then, oh, let's go back to Rand. I was not done with Rand. So number one, Rand was much too whiny, I think. Much too whiny, always complaining, not trustworthy of, like, anything. And then also, kind of like with Nynaeve and Lan, where it was, like, this, like, love that could have been, or, like, we wish it could have been, there was, like, in the book, at least, it was a very similar situation with Rand and Egwene. Oh, I think I talked about it. Yeah, where their parents kind of, like, when they were kids, were always, like, you know, messed around, like, oh, they're going to end up together, you know, oh, they're going to get married one day. And that was the whole thing. We're like, oh, like, what could have been? Like, what if we could be together? But then in the show, once again, everybody, I swear to you, everybody in the show was fucking. And it's like first 10 minutes of the first episode, you see Matt, or you see Rand and Egwene going at it in a back room. And I'm like, my eyes, like, I did not need that. Like, the story did not need that. Once again, I understand trying to, like, spice it up and, like, you know, when you adapt something to the screen, you got to make it exciting. But, like, the story literally would have been the same without that. Like, if you would go into the editing room and just pluck out that scene and put it in the trash, the story would be the same. And then because you know that they had sex, it just, like, through all the episodes, through the show, it's just, like, they're just always doing this little petty bickering, and it's just, like, so unnecessary. Like, it's adding nothing to the show. Literally adding nothing, but, oh, here we go again. Rand is mad at Egwene, or Egwene is pissed at Rand again. Like, unnecessary. I think that sums up a lot of my gripes with the character changes, is that they were unnecessary. Like, why? Why change it? Why do that? And then finally, my last one, my list of character personality differences, but this isn't a personality difference per se, but I just don't understand. And here's the thing, guys, this comes from a good place. I am a person of color, okay? But, like, I don't like whenever show creators change the race of a character to seem more inclusive. So Perrin, in the book, he's described as being, like, big. Like, he's a blacksmith, right? So he's big, he's tall, he's got broad shoulders. But then in the show, he's black. And I'm not here to say, like, oh, you know, he couldn't be black. But, like, there's literally nothing in the book that would say that he's black. And then they make a point. Like, there's a scene about it. Like, oh, his hair is different. And it's, like, literally unnecessary. Unnecessary. Like, I didn't need that. And I don't even care. I don't care if Perrin is black. Great. Fine. Whatever. But, like, it was I didn't need it. We didn't need it. Okay? We didn't need it. And so, okay. Get my shit together. So we talked about key plot change. We talked about character changes. But this next point, guys, is the meat and potatoes, okay? It's literally the last two episodes of the show are what lost me, because I know, it's an adaptation. And adaptations have the right to change things. That's literally what it's called. It's adapting a medium into another medium. But when you fundamentally change things about the story, that's why I said it's Wheel of Time in name only. It's Wheel of Time in name and character name only. Because the way that they change the last two episodes, and trust me, I'm going to talk about it, but the way that they change these last two episodes is literally not even the same show, okay? So we all remember, we just talked about it, we all remember the gang, they go through the ways, they have to get to Faldara, so then they can go to the Blight, so then they can go to the Eye of the World, and then some shit goes down at the Eye of the World, and then you learned Rand is a dragon reborn, right? Okay, scratch that. Literally, get your piece of paper and erase that. It does not happen. Because in the show, so you got the gang. After they meet up with Loial and they decide, hey, we need to go to the Eye of the World because some shit's going down, right? And then Loial takes them to the portal to get to the ways. And then the portal is opening up and the gang is walking through. And then Matt was just like, I don't think I'm going to go. And they're like, hello? You're not going to go? Matt was like, not feeling it. And then the portal closes, and then Matt is just wherever Matt is, and that's the last time you see him in the whole show. That was, like, there's 8 episodes, so that was the end of episode 6. You just don't see Matt again, and it's like, okay, no Matt. I mean, he didn't really do anything there, but I thought it was the gang, that went to the Eye of the World. Okay, fine, whatever. We can move past that, I think. And so then they travel through the ways, and they get spit out in Faldara, which I mean is, I understand that for pacing, because in the book, it was like a chapter or two, like some days went by of them traveling through the ways, but then in the show, it was only a couple hours, which that I understand. You got to change some things for pacing, okay? We got to keep the people engaged, okay? So that's fine. So then when they get to Faldara, and they're, you know, trying to make their game plan of, like, what they're going to do when they get to the ways. And then that's when the Lan and Nynaeve sex scene happens. Why? Okay, fine, whatever. They fucked. Fine, whatever. Well, I'll move past it. I'll move past it. And so then that's when Rand and Moraine decide, oh, we don't want to take the whole gang, because if you go to the Eye of the World and you can't channel... Or if you go to the Eye of the World and you're not the Dragon Reborn, then there's a chance that you'll die. And so for whatever reason in the show, Moraine has a death wish. And she was like, well, Rand, you're the Dragon Reborn, so I guess we should go. So it's like, wait, we already know that Rand is the Dragon Reborn. And why does Moraine, like, just want to kill herself? Okay. So that's when she decides to sever her bond with Lan so then he can't come find her. And then her and Rand decide to just go out into the Blight and find the Eye of the World. And so you're like, okay. And so in the book, it takes some time, you know, they literally have to travel through the Blight. Like, it's like a place. You know what I mean? It's not just like a forest. It's like a whole thing. And it takes them some time to get through the Blight and then find the Green Man and find the entrance. But then in the show, it's like, oh, we like stumbled around for a couple hours and then, yeah, we found the Eye of the World. And you're like, okay. And so while they're traveling through the Blight, Moraine decides to give Rand what's called a Sa'angreal, which is like, it's like a little talisman that Aes Sedai use that, like, helps amplify their power. So, like, if they're trying to do something big or if they need a lot of power, they would hold this talisman, this Sa'angreal, that will help power them up. And so Moraine is just like, here you go, Rand. Whenever we find the Dark One, you're probably going to need this. And it's like, okay. And then they make it to the Eye of the World. And Rand gets confronted by the Dark One, which, I mean, okay, that happened, fine, in the book. And so the Dark One is trying to tempt him to come to the dark side, my child, come to the dark side, work for me, right? And kind of takes him into, like, puts him into this, like, dream vision thing where it's supposed to be, like, a what-if situation, like, oh, you know, if you come and fuck with me, then, you know, you and Egwene will, like, be able to get married and, like, have a kid and, you know, have a life together. And Rand was like, ooh, that sounds kind of good. And you're like, Rand, are you really about to sit here and get tempted by the Dark One? Like, we all know how the story is going to end. Like, why are you even pretending, bro? But then, so, like, while Rand is in this dream vision or whatever, in the real world, you've got the Dark One is, like, facing off against Moraine, who's, like, trying to, like, she's, like, really, she's sitting there crossing her fingers trying to hope that Rand is gonna, like, make the right decision and decide to fight for the Light. And so they're, like, you know, having their little magic-y battle or whatever. And then the Dark One, he literally cuts Moraine. He's able to cut Moraine off from touching the One Power, what's called stilling her. And you're like, wait. The Dark One can do that? Like, we literally have not established that before. What? And so, yeah, he literally severed... Not only did Moraine sever her soul bond with her warder, but then the Dark One is able to sweep in and sever her soul bond with the one true source? So she just can't do magic anymore? Okay. And then flip back to the dream vision thing, and then Rand, he was like, well, no, you know, I am a good guy, so I am gonna not fuck with you, devil. And then he uses the Sa'angreal to amplify his power that he can just somehow use and defeat the Dark One for now, ? And then so he gets out of the vision, he beats the Dark One, he gets out of the vision, and then was just like, oh, I'm sorry, Moraine. I'm afraid I'm gonna go mad, so I'm just gonna leave. And then he leaves. And then that's how it ends. And when I tell you, I'm sitting in front of the TV with my husband and I'm like, what the fuck did we just watch? Like, what? What? Oh, I forgot. So that's happening. And then back at Faldara, because like I said, it was just Rand and Moraine that went. So then like the rest of the party, they're still at Faldara. And while that's going on, there's like Trollocs and stuff trying to attack them. And so then all the women have to band together to use the one power to fight off the Trollocs. And so all the women that are there in Faldara that can channel, they all come together and they hold hands. And Nynaeve has this random Super Saiyan moment where she just fucking explodes with power and is able to make this big blast to fend off the Trollocs. But then she literally, I mean, I've said it time and time again, where if you use too much power, you'll literally burn up from the inside out. So like, what do you think is going to happen when you have when you go Super Saiyan? When you just learned 2 days ago that you can channel, she burns up from the inside out. And you're like, oh, no, Nani, I guess you're dead. But then Egwene can just heal her and is able to touch the one power, even though she just learned how to touch the one power. But she's able to touch the one power and heal her. And you're like, oh, it's fine. She's fine. Everything's fine. And then that's how it ends. It ends with Rand ran away. Matt didn't come with him, even though he still has this cursed dagger. You got Nynaeve and Egwene, who were just like really good at using the one power, even though they literally have never been trained in using the one power. And then, yeah, that's literally how it ends. And then, oh, and then there's like a little teaser at the end for season two. Introducing the big bad, which I mean, that was kind of cool, introducing the Shan Chan, because that is who's like the main antagonist in book two. But like, at this rate, are we even gonna, if we're gonna do 8 episodes to go through the whole Shan Chan situation, like, I'm not even sure, like, how are we gonna do this? Because like, we flew through this first book, okay? Like, we were moving and we left out things and we changed a lot of things. So like, are we even gonna, how is it? I don't know. I'm scared. I'm scared for season two, guys. I'm so scared. Because, like, see, the book two was, like, really good. Like I said, introducing the Shan Chan. Like, I'm not even going to talk about them today. But introducing the main antagonist and, like, the whole, like, plot and, like, the whole thing that's going on in book two. Like, that was good stuff, okay? I was really excited for that. But, like, I'm scared. If I'm keeping it 100 with you, I am scared. So, so this is what I mean when I say I had a lot of feelings about the Wheel of Time show, and I'm scared for season two. And yeah, I mean, if you watched, how about this? Change my mind. If you watched the Wheel of Time show and you liked it, tell me, let me know in the comments. You know, leave me a comment on Instagram. Change my mind as to why I should like the show. Because when I go into things, when I go into shows or movies that are adaptations, and I've seen a good, like, nowadays, this point in my lifetime, I've read a lot of books that have been adapted into shows or into movies. And so, like, I know how to approach these things. You know what I mean? Like, I know, of course, it's not going to be exactly the same. Like, it literally cannot. You physically cannot put everything in a book into a show or a movie. But when you fundamentally make changes that make up the book, that's what I can't fuck with. That's what really upsets me. And I really feel like the show was Wheel of Time in name only. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong that it wasn't. So, like I said, if you've seen the show, let me know what did you think about it. Did you read the book? Did you not read the book before you read it? Or have you read the book and not watched the show? Did I accidentally turn you off from watching the show? I kind of apologize, but not really. Like, maybe I'm saving you the same heartache that I went through. Oh, man, guys. Wheel of Time. I am really glad that I made an episode about it, because literally I think we watched season finale in like February and I'm still thinking about it. Like it haunts my dreams. Like it really had me fucked up. Oh man. But guys, I think we're gonna call it into the episode. I need to go like recover from that. Like it just talking about it again just like brought up all of these feelings I have, and like I thought I pushed them down far enough, but like they're coming back up. So I need to go recover. Thanks for hanging out. Make sure to like and subscribe on YouTube. Leave me a rate. How do you podcast? Leave me a rating on iTunes if you like it. On Spotify, I think you can like, you know, favorite me as an artist or something. How do you podcast? If you like me, cool. You know how to do the things. And we'll be back soon with another episode. Next episode, I'm really excited for. Might have Daz in here. I got to figure out how to use two mics. That's like the big limiting factor right now. Hey, if you know how to record with two mics, leave me a comment down on my YouTube video and let me know. And with that, guys, I'll see you on the next episode. Bye.